were young, living at home, kids and the like. I think some people who feel like as a child growing up that they didn't necessarily do the best job and they feel like it's a lost opportunity. So of course it's always tshuva. But I think in this case, perhaps especially that is the case, because when we look at the geder, the definition that the Torah gives or the Gemara gives for the mitzvah kibud av v'aim, we will find that these are things that are primarily done when the parents are older, and generally speaking, the children are older. The Gemara says that examples of kibud av v'aim are machil, mashket, to feed your parents, to give them things to drink, malbish u'mechase, to get them dressed and to cover them, machnes u'motzi, to take them out, in other words, help them go out or help them come in. So if they need help going shopping or going to shul or whatever it is, to help them out. And these are often things that are more likely to occur when the parents are elderly. That's when they need help getting dressed. And when, generally speaking, the kids are older, no longer kids. And I think that's a very different perspective than we generally think of kibud av v'aim. We sometimes think of kibud av v'aim as cleaning up my room when my mother tells me to, or going to bed on time. But the truth is, that's not the classical example given by the Gemara. Now, obviously, it's not limited to these things. So let's say helping clean the house, or doing errands, or all sorts of things. These are all included in the classical examples of kibud av v'aim. I saw a comment from Rav Sadia Gaon, who's quoted by Rabbi Nubachia, who says a fascinating thing. Why is it that the Torah mentions the schar of arichos yamim for kibud av v'aim? So he answers, ki mipnei shelefamim asidim sheyichyu ha'avos im habanim zman aruch, ha'avos heim lamasa kaved al habanim, ve'akaved yichbar alehem. Sometimes parents will live a long life, and that's a wonderful thing, but that's a burden on the children for many, many years. It's a bracha, obviously, but it's sometimes a bracha with a high burden. And that's what it says. Ki mipnei shelefamim asidim sheyichyu av lekach kava leim schar hamitzvah hazos lemaan yarichon yamecha. Kolomar alecha lechabdam v'tichye imahem. You should be mechabed them and you live with them. V'mulai titzdar al chayehem da shel chayecha al tamitzdar. Very interesting. So what is the definition of kibud av v'aim? And the reason why this is an interesting question is, like we said, the examples of the Gemara seem to imply that kibud av v'aim means taking care of one's parents' physical needs, right? If we were to try to give a definition of these examples, machil, mashke, malbish, mechase, motzi, machnas, that's what it seems, taking care of one's parents' physical needs. So the question is, what is the scope of the mitzvah? Is it limited to those types of examples, or is it broader? And the Gemara in Yevamos is where the Rishonim really deal with this issue. And it's actually a very complicated Gemara. It's relating to the sugya of aseh do chalos aseh. And without going into too many details, there are three basic approaches that you see, I think, in the Rishonim in that sugya. Tosfos maintains that the definition of kibud av v'aim is quite narrow. It is those types of things, like those listed in the Gemara, of taking care of their physical needs, but would not necessarily include requests that the parents make that don't directly relate to their physical needs. Rashi seems to disagree. Rashi seems to understand that all things that a parent asks their child are included in kibud av v'aim. The most interesting position, and I think that this might be the position we follow, this is the view of the Rashba, is that there is the mitzvah defined narrowly and the mitzvah defined broadly. And this is the way I understand the Rashba. The Chazon Ish says a similar thing, and the Gra implies this as well. The, strictly speaking, when the Torah says Kaved es avicha v'yasimecha, what that means is take care of your parents' physical needs. That's what the psukim mean. But from that idea, we can extrapolate and expand the definition to include many more things. Why? On what basis? So many times in the Torah we find mitzvos formulated in a narrow way, but from that narrow formulation we can derive a general principle. The way the Chazon Ish puts it here is, what is the Ratzon HaTorah? So if the Torah tells us to take care of your parents' physical needs, like malbish, mechase, machil, mashke, so what is the Torah telling us, and why does it say it? It's telling us that we have to recognize, like we explained last week, the source of our existence, our parents, and have hakar satov to them, and do what we can to help them. And if that's true, so there's no reason why it should be limited to taking care of their physical needs, but rather should include many more things. And generally speaking, trying our best to fulfill their requests. So that is, from the narrow formulation, we can extrapolate a broader mitzvah. And there are many mitzvos in the Torah where we find this. I think in other contexts in this Monday night shiur, we've given examples. We give two examples. One, which we did more recently when we did Hilchos Tshuva, was that according to the Rambam, the formulation of the Torah is vidui, but from vidui you extrapolate a broader mitzvah of tshuva, because vidui without tshuva doesn't make sense. When it comes to Talmud Torah, the Torah focuses on teaching, v'shinantem levanecha, maybe v'lamadetem es b'neichem, but from there we learn general obligation to learn. When it comes to Baal Tashchis, the Torah says you can't destroy fruit trees needlessly during wartime. From there we extrapolate a broader mitzvah of needless wastefulness, and so on and so forth. There are many examples. Now, in all these examples, we have to ask, well, if we extrapolate from the narrow mitzvah a broader principle, so why does the Torah formulate it narrowly? So, in this case, that means, if we're extrapolating from the obligation to take care of their physical needs, machil, mashke, malbish, mechase, a broader principle to generally do what they ask, so why does the Torah formulate it narrowly?
Can you even ask that already from the way it's formulated in the negative? Yishimova v'yitzira v'es Shabbos osay tishmaro. It says there that you're not allowed to break Shabbos because your parents ask you. That's not a physical need necessarily.
So that's actually a very good point. And that relates to that sugya in Yevamos, which Rashi and Tosus are disagreeing about. Without getting into too many details, that's actually exactly the point over there. We have a drasha that tells us that if your parents tell you to violate Shabbos, you shouldn't listen to them. And the question is, what type of thing is that talking about? Where would we have thought that you should listen to them? Is it they tell me to fry an egg for them to eat? Is frying the egg a fulfillment of kibud av v'aim and the like? So I said I wouldn't get into the technical details, but the truth is that the question you're asking is right on, and that gets to the very point. But again, let's go back to our question, which is, why does the Torah formulate it narrowly if it's meant more broadly? And the answer is because there are, when it comes to the narrow formulation, we always listen to our parents, at least in the event that it's not telling us to violate the Torah or the like. But when it comes to the broader definition, so then, while it may be the case that generally it's the Ratzon HaTorah, that we listen to the requests of our parents, but because it's not formally a obligation, meaning to say it's not what the Torah explicitly states is required, so therefore, when the circumstances are such that these requests are inappropriate, so then we don't necessarily have to listen to our parents, because the formal definition of the mitzvah is not that way. For example, the only time I would have had a havamina, the way the Rashba puts it, is that it would be docha the lav, that you would listen to your parents even against the Torah, is when it relates to taking care of their physical needs. But other cases, I would not have even had that havamina. Now, as we go through the halachos, we'll see several examples of this, and we'll address them more fully. But to give a couple of examples, my parents tell me that they want me to be a lawyer, and I want to be a doctor, or the reverse. So I have to ask, does that request relate to their physical needs? Answer is, it doesn't. It's not like they're asking me to cook them supper or pick up the groceries. And therefore, because it doesn't technically fall into that obligation, I think I should be a doctor. Obviously, I should take my parents' advice very seriously, but ultimately the decision is mine, because it's not about them, it's about me. Now, the irony is that people oftentimes do the exact opposite of what they should do in this case. What happens is they fight and they fight and they fight with their parents, and then they end up listening to their parents. And really, they don't have to listen to their parents, but they shouldn't fight with their parents. Another example, we alluded to this last week, and we'll maybe address this more fully a little later, but it relates to marriage. Parents say, marry this person, or don't marry this person. So the Maharik writes that since, and he has other reasons as well, but one reason he says is, since that this does not relate to the parents' needs, it's not machilo, mashkiho, malbisho, manilo, it's not directly relating to their needs, you don't have to listen to them. These are obviously very large life examples. A smaller example, my mother tells me, and all the examples I'm going to give, when I say my mother, I'm making up examples, they're not true. I should wear a coat outside because it's cold, or because I have a cold. And the problem is, it's not cold, and it's the middle of the summer. And wearing a coat in the middle of the summer doesn't make you healthier or get rid of your cold or the like, but that's what she thinks, or whatever she thinks. She tells me to eat raw garlic to get rid of my cold or the like. Somebody, a student of mine, once asked me, his parents really, really, really wanted him to be on the tennis team. He really didn't want to be on the tennis team. And being on the tennis team is like a lot of time. So all sorts of things like that. So do you have to listen to them? The answer is no, because these don't relate to their physical needs. Now, is it a mitzvah to listen to them? Yes. According to many poskim, it still is a mitzvah to listen to them. And therefore, I think that when it is not too great of an imposition, you should. And certainly, if it's going to cause them pain to know that you're not listening to them. So my mother will be really nervous if I don't wear that coat outside. And even if I think that coat's making me uncomfortable, it's a mitzvah to listen to her. And whenever possible, one should always try to listen to what their parents say. However, because technically speaking, the mitzvah does not apply to this in a narrow sense, we just extrapolate and expand. So in cases where there is a significant burden and cost, for example, choosing a career that you don't want and that doesn't interest you, so then we would say you don't have to listen. Now, is there evidence that it's not just the narrow mitzvah? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm being too machmir. Maybe it's only machilo, mashkeo, malbisho, manilo. Maybe it's only the narrow fulfilling and taking care of their physical needs. The answer is, I think there are a number of sources in the Gemara that clearly indicate that it's not limited to that. I'll give you one example. the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Mechabdo b'chayev u'mechabdo b'mosu. You should do kibud av v'em when your parents are alive and when they're dead. And it gives examples. We'll elaborate upon these examples later. The example, though, of kibud when they're alive is that if I'm trying to get something, and I could say, do it for my sake. Or I could say, do it for my mother's sake or my father's sake, and they would listen. So I should say, do it for my mother's sake or my father's sake, because this brings kavod to my parents. It brings honor to them. In this case, it's not taking care of their physical needs. Or the Gemara says, what's an example of kibud av v'em la'achar misa? So again, we'll get to the details later, but it says that if one's parents has died within 12 months, when you refer to them, you would say, Hareini kaparas mishkavo, or mishkava. And after 12 months, you'd say, Zichrono levracha l'chayo amaba. So again, we'll get to that details later, but that's not taking care of their physical needs. You think maybe that's their spiritual needs. But the answer is, I think, that this Gemara implies that, and other sources as well, that there's a broader mitzvah of kavod, which one generally tries to fulfill, and a more narrow mitzvah of kavod. There's another opinion, very interesting view, the Makna. The Sefer HaMakna, it's also the author of that flaw, one of the Gdolei Achronim, says, even though the mitzvah of kavod is limited to the narrow things of machilu, mashkeihu, taking care of their physical needs, but because of yira, oftentimes you have to do what they say. Because if they tell you to do something and you say no or you ignore them, then it's a violation of yira, of yira sabayim. Which would mean, according to him, perhaps, that if your parents say you have to go to medical school, you do have to listen, even if you really don't want to. However, my impression is from the poskim that we don't accept that. Again, one should try, as under normal circumstances, to listen to their parents. But where there's a significant cost involved, then you don't have to. We'll talk later about a very interesting raya that the Makna brings to Ashita, which is a nice raya, but I still think that we don't paskin like that. And we'll get to some of the rayos a little bit later. So, that is the basic hagdara of the mitzvah. Now, the next thing we have to talk about is what expenses, to what lengths must I be willing to go? What about when the costs are high? So, let's say helping them takes a long time. Let's say if I want to help my parents, then I will have to miss work. And I will earn... I will lose money, not necessarily lose money out of pocket, but I will forego money that I could have made. So the halacha is that generally speaking, in this case, if your parents actually need help, then you have to do that. As we'll see shortly, you don't have to lay, generally speaking, assuming your parents have money themselves, you don't have to lay out your own money to take care of their needs, their physical needs, like we said last week. If you're going grocery shopping for them, you can use their credit card, assuming they give you permission. But you don't have to, the mitzvah is not to spend your own money to get them the groceries. You could use their money. But you do have to be willing to forego earning your money in order to help them. Meaning, so you don't have to lay out money out of pocket, but you have to forego income. And the Gemara says this explicitly. The Gemara says that if we follow, there's actually a debate in the Gemara, do you have to lay out your own money or not? So the Gemara says, I have a proof for the opinion, again, this is the opinion we reject, that you have to lay out your own money, because the Pasuk says, Kabed es avicha vesimecha, and the Pasuk says, Kabed es Hashem mehonecha. So just like you have to honor God with your own money, be willing to spend your money to fulfill mitzvot, you have to spend money out of pocket to buy a lulav and esrog, so too you should have to spend money out of pocket for kibud av v'em, even when there's a chisaron kiss. And the Gemara says, no. Chisson kiss in this case doesn't mean money out of pocket. You don't have to do that, at least if your parents have money. But rather it means bitul malacha. What's bitul malacha? I have to be willing to miss work. Missing work means losing income. And therefore, you see that you have to be willing to lose income to honor your parents. The Ritva compares this to Chol HaMoed. The halacha is that on Chol HaMoed, you don't have to, if not going to work will cause a davar ha'aved, a loss of money, then you're allowed to go to work on Chol HaMoed. But you're not allowed to go work on Chol HaMoed for minyas revach. In other words, if I go to work, I'm going to make a lot of money. Every day I go to work, I make another $1,000. So if I work on Chol HaMoed, I'll make $2,000, $3,000. But if I stay home from work, I don't lose any money. I just don't make that money. So then I'm not allowed to go to work, generally speaking, on Chol HaMoed. Same thing with my parents. So if by not going to work, I'm going to lose money, I will lose my job, and or I'll have to, you know, there'll be out-of-cost expenses. So then, I don't have to, I could say, no, I can't help you. But if it's just a loss of potential earning, or, for example, I have vacation days or the like, then I must use up those vacation days to help my parents. The Ramban proves this from the Gemara that we mentioned last week about Dama ben Nesina. Remember, Dama ben Nesina didn't wake up his father and lost the opportunity to make huge sum of money. So the Ramban says, one second, you don't have to lose money. And he answers, that's minyas harevach, a loss of opportunity, but not a hafseg mamon. So in that case, since he just lost the opportunity to make money, he was obligated to do that. Because there's no out-of-pocket expense. It's not like he had to take money out of his pocket. Rather, he lost the chance to make money. Is that raya? Is that proof definitive? Not necessarily. Other Rishonim say that's different because it was tsar. Maybe you actually do have to lose money to prevent them from tsar, like waking them up. Or maybe the Sefer Shita Lonod Lami says that was Midas Chasidus. He didn't have to do that. But the way the Ramban and other Rishonim learn, that was something he had to do because it was Minias Ravach and not Hafseid Mamo. Yes? So that's a good question. And the answer, I think, is it depends. In other words, if it means a lot to your parents to accompany them to the doctor's office, you're not just being their chauffeur, but you're picking them up, and you're going inside with them, and even if you're just even, you know, sitting next to them in the waiting room, a lot of times makes a big difference. So then, if possible, one should go with them. That's part of taking care of them. If it's literally nothing more than being a chauffeur, and it would otherwise mean missing work, so then, yeah, presumably it would be okay to have somebody else do it. The Gemara tells a story about how one of the Amoraim used to, even though he had five strong, healthy sons, when his father would knock on the door, he would come running and say, I'm coming, I'm coming. And the Gemara says this is an extraordinary example of kibud avein, because even though it would have been very easy for him to ask one of his children to take care of this, like get the door, he wanted the opportunity to do the mitzvah himself. So that's true in general when it comes to kibud avein. If you could do it yourself, that's better than just having somebody else do it. But like you said in your example, where my doing it will be very difficult, like I have to miss work, and I could get somebody else to do just as good of a job, so then that might be okay. But if somebody else can't do as good of a job, or I'm able to do it myself without a significant cost, then it's probably better to do it yourself. So these are, on a practical level, hard questions to answer. But certainly these are the values. Yes, Shui.
So based on this, if a parent needed full-time help, the child would be expected to give up their job and provide it?
So yes, to a certain degree, and we'll have to talk about the degree. Is there a limit? So far from what we've seen, the answer is yes, but there might be cases where we say, no, that's too much, you don't have to. And we'll consider a number of examples of that case. Yes? No? Yes?
How is that so different than like a parent's obligation to be even funding for their child? So then you don't need to like stop working because you can be punished for your child without it goes back to school.
That's a very good point. I think the answer is... there is a slight difference between chinuch and the like, but if a person thought that their kids would not get a proper chinuch unless the parents did it themselves, and they could do it themselves, then they should do it themselves. So the reason why we send our kids to school is a combination of two factors. Number one, we think that the schools, hopefully supplementing our own chinuch, but the schools will do a better job than us. They're professionals. And B, the option of our doing it ourselves doesn't necessarily exist because we have to make a living. Otherwise, there wouldn't be what to eat and where to live. And therefore, there's not really another option. But I think that when it comes to chinuch, ideally a parent's attitude is, there's nothing more important than this. And I have to be willing to give up whatever I can give up for this mitzvah. But it's not obvious that the solution, even if you have that attitude, is to be mechanech your children exclusively by yourself. So... and a lot of times, just like for chinuch, and for taking care of parents, you have to look at the small picture, and you also have to look at the bigger picture. Right? What is going to yield better results in the long term? And we'll give some examples of that in a minute, where sometimes when you look at the bigger picture, it might indicate a certain course of action, and that would be appropriate. So we'll consider such some examples. So how far does this go? So the Shulchan Aruch says something quite remarkable. The Shulchan Aruch says that Zeh shemachilo mashgehu mishal aveim. So like we said before, when you buy them the groceries, you can use their credit card. Im yeshlo, if the parents have. We'll talk about later, if the parents don't have, then the children should actually support them in a sense of buying them food and the like. Avachayev l'chabdon begufo. So you have to take care of them with your guf. You have to actually be the one to take care of them. Afal pi shemitoch kach batel mimalacha. Even though that will cause you to have to be mevatel mimalacha, miss work. V'yitztarech l'chazer al apsachim. And actually go begging. In other words, how far do you have to go? You actually have to go so far as to take care of your parents. And even if that causes you to miss so much work, then now you have no money. So you have to go begging. That's how far you have to go. The dafka de islay leben mizonos litzune hahuyoma. That's if you at least have food for that day. Aval ilaslay, if the child does not have food for that day, lo mechayev levato memalachto velachsar lepsach. Then you don't have to be mevato melacha. So if I have food for today, and my parents ask me to take care of them, to bring them to the doctor, so then I have to do so. And if in the end that's going to cause me to have to go begging for food tomorrow or the next day or the like, so be it. But if I don't have any food for today, then I'm allowed to tell my parents, I'm sorry, can't take you to the doctor, I can't, I have no money, and I have to take care of myself. And we know in general, chayecha kodmin, your own life, your own needs go first.
It almost sounds like even davar ha'aved doesn't really work, because in the future, as long as you're set for today,
no,
if you would lose your job tomorrow.
No, well, that might be, a loss of job might be considered a davar ha'aved. Davar ha'aved is obviously shelling out money from your pocket, but there are cases where we would consider the loss of a job a davar ha'aved. So this is talking about, let's say, an example of a day laborer. Every day he gets a different job. So if he has money for today, then he has to help his parents. If he doesn't have money for today, then he's pater. The Rishonim pask in this halacha from a stira, basically. The Yerushalmi says that you have to be mechazer al apsachim, literally you have to go begging for kibud avayim. And the Bavli says, no, you don't even have to lose money out of pocket. So the resolution is, you don't have to pay money out of pocket, but you have to take care of them begufo. And even if that might lead to a situation where you'll have to go begging, that's, though there might be other Rishonim that answer that question differently, that's the way their Shulchan Aruch paskens. So basically, that is quite an onerous burden. Now, it could be that in today's day and age, one day's worth of food means something very different than it did in the olden days. We don't live day to day, and times have changed and the like. And it might mean that if a person's basic sense of their basic needs being met will be undermined by their helping their parents, such that they feel that if I help my parents, my basic needs won't be met, so then we would say chayecha kodmin. So it might not literally be one day's worth of food today, but I think what it does highlight is the extent to which a person is obligated. So going back to Shuli's question, do you have to give up your job? Well, it depends if you need a job. In other words, you don't have to spend money out of pocket. But if a person theoretically didn't need the income, and their choice is go to work or miss work and take care of their parents, and their parents really need that, so then it would seem that they'd be obligated to go take care of their parents. But it's important to remember a couple of things. Number one is we're talking here about taking care of them. We're not talking about visiting. In other words, if my parents really want me to visit, they enjoy the company and the like, but it means missing work and a loss of revach, so then I'm not obligated. Now, visiting one's parents is very important as well. It makes them feel good, and it's not a small thing. But it's not the same obligation. That's not the extent, like we said before, the obligation is different when it comes to visiting them just to because they enjoy your company versus taking care of their physical needs. The only time that we say the obligation is so extreme is when it comes to taking care of their physical needs. Also, going back to your example, you can make sure that they're taken care of in a different way by someone else besides you. So again, ideally, we always say you should do the mitzvah yourself. You should delegate to somebody else. But in cases where the costs are high, then you would be able to. Now, interestingly, in that case, you would have to pay for it, because they're doing it. You're doing it not for them; it's to get you out of the obligation, right? So, if you're hiring someone to do what you should be doing, like machilo mashkehu malbisho manilo, so then you can't charge them because that's your obligation. So
isn't it only your obligation once they can't do it themselves?
Well,
I'm not obligated to go to the supermarket for my
correct. So you don't have to pay for the groceries, but you have to feed them. Now, usually, and you know, under normal circumstances, these obligations that we've been talking about, machilo, mashkilo, no parent's gonna, hopefully, I mean, again, sometimes it's not a good situation, but typically will ask or will want this type of help if they're capable of doing it themselves. In other words, what we're talking about now is cases where the parents need the help. In other words, they can't do it themselves. So in that case, we're saying that in terms of costs, like the food, the cost of the food, you don't have to pay for it. In terms of, but you do have to go buy it for them or cook it for them or prepare it for them. Now, if you're going to hire someone to do that in your place, so since they're, that's taking over your obligation, so then you would have to pay for that. I'll give you another interesting example. This is, they say this in the name of Reb Chaim, the cost of getting there. So again, I don't have to pay out of pocket for their groceries. So I'm going to go grocery shopping for them, they have to pay for the groceries. But what about if I want to go visit them? So let's say I live a mile away, so I could walk or I could take an Uber. If I want to take an Uber, I have to pay for the Uber because I could walk. That's to save me effort. So then that is going to be, that obligation will be upon me. Yes? I can't hear a little louder. Yeah, we're going to talk about actually parents living in a different city and the obligation of living near your parents. That's a little later on. We could skip to that. All right, that'll be the last topic for today. So what is the obligation to live near your parents? So this is a very touchy topic. I see everybody's laughing a lot. And it's sometimes a tricky topic because, you know, I'm very fortunate. My parents moved close to us. So that makes this opportunity to do Kibud HaVeim a little easier. But in a certain sense, some poskim say that since a child has this obligation, they have to live near their parents. That's part of the mitzvah, so that you'll be able to be mekayim mitzvos kibud achayim, that would obligate a person to live nearby. And you see this in a couple of places in Chazal. It says about Avram Avinu that he was very hesitant to leave his parents to go to Eretz Yisrael. And Hashem said, Lech lecha me'artzecha mimoladetcha mi'beis avicha la'artz asher areka. And Chazal say that Hashem told Abraham, I'm pottering you from Kibud Avim. But you, not necessarily others. It was, the Medrash implies in one place, a special dispensation. And even more to the point, it says that Yaakov Avinu suffered for 22 years when Yosef disappeared because he did not fulfill Kibud Avim for 22 years. Now, he didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Kibud Avim because he was far away. And to add to it, why'd he go there? His mother and father sent him there. And moreover, he was fleeing from his life. And still, we see he's held accountable and even punished for his lack of fulfilling Kibud Avim. The Gemara says he wasn't punished for the years that he spent learning Yeshiva Shem Ba'ever. For Talmud Torah, one is allowed to live far away from their parents. But for other reasons, not. Now, some of the Mefarshim are bothered, but still his parents sent him away and he was fleeing for his life. Maybe it's because Yaakov Avinu came back, did not come back as soon as he could have. The Marsha suggests that we find at the end, even after he left Lavan, he could have moved a little more quickly and the like. But fundamentally we see, however you explain that Gemara, that Yaakov was punished for failure to fulfill Kibud Avim because he was far away. So you see that we don't just say, well, since he was far away and thereby could not fulfill Kibud Avim, that he is automatically exempt. At the same time, there are factors that justify it. Things like Talmud Torah, or even Parnassa. The person would not be able to find a Parnassa near where their parents live and the like. Then it might be different when it comes to women who get married. It might be that, we'll talk about this next week when we talk about the difference between men and women with respect to Kibud Av V'Aim. It could be that since part of marriage is going to one's husband's home, so that would exempt them to some degree from Kibud Av V'Aim and the like. So there are questions, there are times that we might say that there are exceptions, and certainly if one's parents are mochel, we know that mechila works for Kibud Av V'Aim. So if a parent is mochel, that too could be a reason to live far away. If you ask your parents for reshus, I would love to live near you, but there's this great job opportunity halfway across the country. Do you give me reshus? And the parents say, yes, I give you reshus, I'm mochel. So then it would be okay. But it's not pashut. It's a shaila. I don't think it's not pashut that you should always live near your parents, but it's not pashut to live far away from them. And it is a shaila that has to be considered carefully. I saw a very interesting piece from Rav Zilberstein on this topic. He writes that there's a difference between Kibud Av V'Aim and other mitzvos. And he cites a number of poskim, including the Dvar Yoshua, that prove that this is the case. For example, when it comes to other mitzvos, many poskim write that the Torah places a limit on our obligation in terms of how far we have to go to fulfill a mitzvah. And in cases where there is a tircha yisera involved, an excessive effort needed to fulfill the mitzvah, then in many cases with respect to mitzvos asei, we say that you're a putter. It's like your onus, you can't fulfill the mitzvah. Hashem exempted you. The Bir Halacha says this, for example, in Siman Tav Reish Nun Vav, that if you'd have to spend an excessive amount more than what's regular, you're an ones and you're potter. So it could be that if you would have to travel for many hours to get a lulav and esrog, you would be exempt from that mitzvah. However, we find that with respect to Kibud Av V'Aim, that might not be the case. And one of the rayos for this is what we've said, that except when there's something like Talmud Torah, it's not clear cut that a person could live far away from their parents. And we don't say, well, you live far away, so you're pater. Rather, we say, at least under certain circumstances, that you're still chayav. In fact, we'll see from the Gemara, which we'll discuss next time or in two times, that Rav Asi wanted to make, at least according to one reading of the Gemara, aliyah, very much. But as long as his mother needed him to take care of her, he didn't. It's only when, we'll see, she lost her mind and he was unable to take care of her any longer that he went on aliyah. So, actually, we'll talk about that Gemara next time, Be'ezus Hashem. But, at the very least, what you see is that it's not so pashut. It's a shaila. One has to consider that carefully. It's not obvious that a kid can just live wherever they want if that will prevent them from being able to properly fulfill the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Aim. It's also not obvious that they can't. But it's a shaila that has to be carefully considered. Yes?
Two questions. First of all, when Yaakov left his parents' mm-hmm. house. I mean, there were other people who were able to take care.
Okay, good.
And Yosef could have taken care.
He did. Yosef was like, amazing at Kibud Av V'Aim. And that's a very good point. Ad kidei kach, that he was still Nana Shalav. That's, I think that...
So
that,
even if there's somebody else to take care of them.
Again, in a practical shaila, you have to consider all of the considerations. And it's certainly the case that there's a very big difference between when there is someone else who could take care of them and when there isn't. Nevertheless, and you know, you don't necessarily paskin halacha strictly from agadic gemaras like that, but what that gemara highlights is the extent to which this is true.
Also, does a ger have a mitzvah of kibud avim?
So, strictly speaking, no, because they're not, their parents aren't their parents. But the Gemara does say that there is an inyan of kibud avim. This isn't exactly it, but even non-Jews recognize that, and you don't want to see Geirus as a diminution in terms of your obligations, and Moshe has a tshuva about this. So, formally, perhaps less so, but certainly it's not the case that they should abandon their parents and not care for them. So, the post can deal with exactly the nature of that chova, but there is something, even if it's not the same. Yes?
Are you pater if you're a parent who
Yeah, so I think there's a very big difference in that case, where your parents move away from you, or even when you're living in a different city at a time when they didn't really need you, and at this point, to go care for them would be a hefsed, because like we said before, hefsed is very different than minyas harevach. So leaving them to go to a city where you could make more money might not be allowed. But if, with their permission, you're living in a different city already, and now to move to where they live would involve a hefsed, so that's already a different shaila. So again, these shaylas on a practical level have to be carefully considered. But in terms of the values, that's certainly what we see. Yes?
Question, but it's like a little bit of a story.
Yes.
One of my brothers told me over Pesach that there was like a man, a Jewish man in Germany, who at some point, like during the war, I guess he had a child beforehand, and then, I don't know, his family perished unfortunately in the war, and then he got remarried to a non-Jewish woman, and he had a non-Jewish son.
Mm-hmm.
So when he passed away, when this Jewish man passed away, he gave up all of his millions of dollars that he had earned at some point. He split it in half between his two sons.
Mm-hmm.
And the father, who was no longer religious at this point, had asked his sons for a kvura in a Jewish cemetery. The older son, the non-Jewish son, didn't want to do it. And the only way he was willing to bury his father in a Jewish cemetery was if the other brother, the Jewish one who actually stayed religious, Jewish and religious, mm-hmm. Would give him all of his millions of dollars of inheritance. Is that minyas harevach in that situation? Or
yeah.
Is it just really not? I heard the psak was it's not his money in the first place. It's his father's money because his father gave it to him as the inheritance.
It's not his father's.
It's not the child's money. It's the father's money because it's what he gave over to his son as his inheritance. So it really belonged to the father in the first place. But if
so you heard that the psak was he has to give it up.
Yeah, but
I don't know if I could answer that question. Al regalachas.
I feel like I had a whole discussion about it over Pesach. Like,
no, it's an interesting question. Think about it. Where is this like a Zilberstein question?
Probably.
Okay. It's a very fascinating question. I don't know. Let's think about it. It's a tough question. Okay. Yes?
I hope this comes out sounding okay, but I guess how would we define need? Like, I guess also just different parents have different levels of expectations of their children. So for one parent, need could be something like, you know, they're not going to rely on them until they absolutely need to, and then for another parent, need could be like, this needs to happen, I'm going to ask my child to do it, you know, even if it's necessary. Like, I guess, does halacha speak to that at all, or is it really, if a parent asks the child to do it, then it's
so I think yes and no. In other words, generally speaking, if it's reasonable and the parent asks the child, then that's bichlal, the mitzvah, that's included. Can you have... Now, you know, it becomes tricky, and it becomes tricky when parents are making inappropriate requests. But generally speaking, if the parent asks, and this is a reasonable need, then that's when the mitzvah applies. Or if the parent doesn't ask, but the child sees that it's a need, you don't need that request. meaning to say, when it says machilo, mashkeyu, malbisho, manilo, that's not limited to a case where they ask you to do it any time where it's necessary. So obviously, when the parents are healthy, those things can be taken care of themselves. But if it's needed, then they have to do it regardless of the request. Okay, so we have 2 or 3 minutes left, and I promised last time that we would do the last perek of Hilchos Tshuva, because we skipped it and I was caught. So if anybody wants to leave early, this is a very very fascinating perek, and I have a couple of copies left for those who don't have. It's a very, very powerful and moving perek. It may be a very good one to do right now after learning about this very difficult mitzvah. So, in the previous couple of chapters, the Rambam talked about Olam Haba, what it is and what it isn't. And having discussed Olam Haba, the Rambam writes, Al yomar adam hareini osa mitzvos ha-torah v'osik v'chachmasa kedei she'akabel kol habrachos haksuvos ba, o kedei she'ezkel chayol haba. A person should not say, I'm going to do the mitzvos and study chachma in order to get reward, whether it's physical reward, arichas yamim, or even olam haba. And likewise, a person should not say, I'm going to be efosh min haveirosh yeshira Torah mehen, separate or not do sins, kedei she'inatzel min haklalos haksuvos batorah, o kedei shel yikaris mecha olam haba. Person shouldn't say, I'm not going to do aveiros, I won't get gehenim, or I won't get kares, or the like. Ein ra'ui lavod es Hashem al haderech hazeh. It is not appropriate to serve God in this way. She'oved al derech zeh, hu oved miyira. Someone who does service of God in this way, serving God from yira. Ve'ena ma'alas ha'neviyim, ve'lo ma'alas ha'chachamim. It is not the madrega of prophets or chachamim. Now before we read on, a couple of points. Point number one is the Rambam in the previous chapters mentioned that tzaddikim, like David HaMelech, longed for Olam Haba. So seemingly there's a stira here. Here the Rambam says you shouldn't do mitzvos to get Olam Haba. Earlier he said that the tzaddikim longed for Olam Haba. The answer, of course, as many explain, is that there is no stira. A person longs for Olam Haba because they long for closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they long for that closeness. And Olam Haba is the ultimate place of closeness to God. It's not that they're longing for Olam Haba because they do what's right because they're motivated for reward, but they long for that closeness to Hashem. And that's totally legitimate. It's naturally going to be the case. Number two, the Rambam here is based off of the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. We know, Al tiyu kavadim ha-mashamshim ha-sarav al-manas l'kavel pras, rather, shalom manas l'kavel pras. And the Rambam says that's not just with respect to physical rewards or rewards in Olam Hazeh, but even reward in Olam Haba. However, we also find, even though the Rambam writes, and we'll see this more in a second, that this is a low level, doing something for a low level is a lot better than not doing it. We have a principle of mitok shelo lishma balishma, and a person should strive for and long to reach a level where they're doing things entirely lishman. We're going to see what the Rambam means lishman in a minute, what it means, what should be your motivation. But it's pashut that if a person is struggling with a nisayon and thinking about how painful Gehenim will be, is going to be something that helps them not do that particular avera, are thinking about how the schar of olam haba is greater than any pleasure in this world will help them do what's right, and that's going to help them get over that bump, then they should do that. And perhaps that does reflect that they're not on the highest level, what the Rambam calls over here the level of Nevi'im and Chachamim. But if that's what's going to work for you, where you are, so then that's what you should do. And that's why many of the Bali Masr frequently do turn to this, not because they're unaware of the Rambam, but because we have to acknowledge our own weaknesses and frailty and do what works. So this is something that we should strive for. And we'll see the Rambam, in a certain sense, make this point in just a moment. So the Rambam writes, Sha'ovid al derech zeh, someone who serves God in this manner, meaning to say, in order to get rewarded, or to avoid punishment, hu ovid meyira. Now, the Rambam refers to yira here in a negative sense. Yira is not always negative. The Rambam in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, Perek Beis, talks about the tremendous madrega of yira, and the Bali Musar explained that there's a difference between Yiras HaRomimus versus Yiras HaChet or Yiras Onesh. What the Rambam here is talking about is more in the sense of Yiras HaOnesh, not the Yira of recognizing Hashem's Romimus and thereby feeling small, but rather simply it's about you. And the difference between Av and Yira, Yiras HaRomimus versus Yiras HaOnesh, is really who is it about? Is it about me or is it about God? So he says this is not the great madrega. The ein ovdim Hashem al derech zeh ele ame haaretz v'anashim v'ktanim. This is a bad line to do with a woman here. She mechanachin osam la'avod mira. They're educated to do oved avodas Hashem mira ad shetir bedatam v'yavdu me'av, until, and I think this includes women, they can reach a level of avodas Hashem me'ava. So what we should strive for is avodas Hashem me'ava. Even though, to get there, we need Avodas Hashem Meira. And the Rambam is going to make this point in a more striking way in the next halacha. But I think we're out of time. So what we'll do for the end of Hilchos Shuv, at least till we finish, the last six halachos of Hilchos Shuv, is each week we'll do mostly Kibud Av Ve'Em, and the last 5 minutes we'll do halacha from Hilchos Shuv, which is good chizuk and musar. After learning about these tough halachos in Kibud Av Ve'Em, we could always use a little bit of chizuk from the Rambam. So Be'ezus Hashem, we will pick up next week. Have a good evening.